Yep.
What are we doing?
Former senators
coming to chew out today.
The call to order the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Today we'll be appropriating $100 billion to the Farm to School program.
Here,
any
here.
Opposition? Seeing none. Oh, wait. Sorry. Let me open the House Land Use Rural Communities. I'm still in my dream from this morning. Let me open the House Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee and open a public hearing on SJM 10. And because I have not enough chairs for all four of my colleagues who are here, why don't I have these two senators join us first, and then I'll have the two House members come right after that, rather than try and figure out how to separate those little plastic things on the bottom of the chairs to free up a chair, because they invariably break in the middle of doing that. Welcome, senators. Why don't you tell us about this Senate Joint Memorial?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Joint Memorial 10. I'm Senator Richard Devlin from Senate District 19. The memorial urges Congress to designate Willamette Falls and surrounding communities as a national heritage area. This memorial communicates Oregon's support of federal legislation and executive action to recognize Willamette Falls National Heritage Area and restoration of the Willamette Falls locks. It provides the centerpiece of our federal request for assistance. SJM 10 is an opportunity to take positive action to benefit the state of Oregon by encouraging federal recognition of important aspects of our heritage. The proposed National Heritage Area includes history-rich communities along the lower Willamette River, including parts of Oregon City, West Lynn, Lake Oswego, and extending up French Prairie to Willamette Mission State Park. National heritage areas present the interconnected stories of nature and human history. They are places with identifiable, nationally significant resources. They are places with stories of broad interest and public-private support for investment in the communities. A strong base of local grassroots support is essential, with the visible involvement and commitment of residents, government, community groups, nonprofits, and businesses. Mr. Chairman, if I might go a little bit off of my prepared testimony here, I think the number of people that we have to testify on this Senate Joint Memorial might be an indication of that broad support for the memorial. The memorial has three benefits. Should we get the designation, future economic development, historic preservation, and increased heritage-based tourism. This memorial urges the restoration and reopening of the Willamette Falls locks to return navigation and riverborne commerce to communities upstream of Willamette Falls. Mr. Chairman, I urge the House Committee on Rural Communities, Land Use, and Water to send SJM 10 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. And if I might digress from those comments, I think, you know, everyone here is familiar with the area that we're talking about. It is at the core of our history as a state, at the core of our history once as a territory. Unlike Texas, we've never been a nation, but I do sometimes speculate what it would be like if we could get our territory back and Microsoft and Boeing was still in our territory. And maybe you would have your $1 billion for Farm to School if that was the case. But I just urge your support of this measure. Thank you very much.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20. You have heard from Senator Devlin the areas that are included in the National Heritage Area. These sites have nationally significant landscapes and American historic value. The proposed area is also an important nexus of geologic phenomena resulting from the Missoula floods, being the site where the Willamette meteorite was found and the home of the unmatched fertility of the Willamette Valley. The area was a significant gathering place for fishing and trade among numerous peoples for centuries prior to white settlement. The Willamette Falls and Willamette River have been and continue to be important for trade, transportation, commerce, and recreation. The area includes the Champouy State Heritage Area, where the first American-style government west of the Rocky Mountains was created on May 2, 1843. The Oregon Trail ended at Oregon City, making it a destination point for one of the largest overland migrations in human history. Oregon City was the first capital in the Oregon Territory and the first United States city west of the Rocky Mountains to be incorporated. Willamette Falls provided power for industry in the American West, powering early sawmills and eventually generating hydropower for the world-famous Oregon City woolen mills. two paper mills, and the oldest extant multi-lift bypass navigation lock for commercial traffic in the United States. SJR 10 asked Congress to create the National Heritage Area to provide support for revitalization of the National Heritage Area and to provide funds to repair and open the Willamette Falls lock so that once again we may have navigation and commerce on the full length of the Willamette River. And I'd like to digress a little bit too, because if we can open this up and do this, I see dinner cruises from Portland down to Newburgh. I'd like to actually get a little deeper and dredge the river and go all the way to Salem and Albany, but that's a whole new story. But I see a vibrant economy if we can open up the locks and get it back in use again and really move this area forward for tourism. And I ask your support and move this to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Any questions for our Senate colleagues?
I feel like I'm letting them off sort of easy.
Yeah.
They really pounded me the other day.
Got him. Nothing.
Well, Mr.
You're
Chair,
a sponsor of the resolution.
Yeah, I was going to say you're on the.
I am a sponsor, but Senator Rolson, for the first time.
Kick it apart.
Well, no, I feel it's important. The first time I ever testified in front of the Senate was a week or so ago, and your colleagues in the Senate chastised me for speaking for exactly 1 minute and 57 seconds. I'm a radio guy, so I did time it. It was 1 minute and 57 seconds. And they told me that over on that side of the building, they don't take so long. So I'd like you to know that you have another 3 to 8 minutes if you'd like. Go ahead. Because we take our time over here.
No, I understand the importance. Mr. Chair, Representative Post, I understand the importance of your time. I know you got started late. The House usually does start late because they don't get up early enough to start early.
Just right back.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here to encourage your support, so I have nothing to say about the House other than statements in support of its good work.
That's why he's the chair of Ways and Means.
Yeah, exactly. Any further questions? Oh, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the Ways and Means Chair. I'm sorry. you mentioned, I suppose it is part of your district, that it has unmatched fertility. And I'm just wondering if you mean that for the entire fertile Willamette Valley or just your district.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I believe that's for the entire Willamette Valley. But I don't know that it gets into your district. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I think we're going to stop there.
Further relevant questions? Seeing none. Thank you for coming.
Thank you
over.
Very much.
Let me ask Reps Leininger and Kennemer to join us as well.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Ann Leininger. I represent Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland. I'm delighted to be here today. Before I came to this position, I spent some time as a Clackamas County Commissioner, and I can tell you firsthand the tremendous collaborative work that's been happening in Clackamas County around revitalization of the Willamette Falls area, both on the West Lynn side and on the Oregon City side. Communities have come together, done some thoughtful planning, worked with stakeholders, you know, businesses and regional governments, and they're really poised to do some magnificent things, restoring the locks, securing designation of natural heritage status for this area is going to validate some important work, but also, you know, help them continue this tremendous road of encouraging tourism and vitality in an area that's really at the core of our community in Clackamas and has important heritage aspects. You may have tracked that people in Clackamas County don't always agree on everything. And that's shocking. But one thing that's really true is that people have come together around this because I think everyone of all sort of political perspectives recognizes and, you know, ways of doing economic development sees this as a really great opportunity for us to capitalize on a natural asset, to do something that, that honors our history and do something that's going to be beautiful and invite other people into a gem within our community. So I live in Lake Oswego, which is not right there at the core of the falls, but I 100% support this, and I hope that you'll send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Kenemer, State Representative, District 39. And thank you for having this hearing on this important bill. It kind of takes me down a little bit of my own personal memory lane, and it's an incredible memory lane, of course, really for our state and for our history, both locally and statewide. I remember in the early days in 87 in the Senate having some county commissioners come and press about the importance of preserving those locks and all kinds of different things. And I could go on with a lot of memories, but I think one of the next ones is I was now a county commissioner, and there was this outstanding congresswoman by the name of Darlene Hooley who said, you know, we've got to do something with this area. And she called together quite a group of us, and I would say repeatedly. But, you know, the time was not quite ripe. The paper mills were still going very, very strong, and we just, I don't know. But now it seems to me like there's a different time. With the one paper mill, its demise, and there's pieces of that that are very sad. But on the other hand, things happen, and it creates a fantastic opportunity to save this heritage area and to realize that an area that goes well below the falls and all the way up to the Wheatland Ferry. I think it's a fabulous idea. I think we've got a wonderful team. It's nice to have a former Congress member willing to help take this out east and do some of the work that needs to be done there. I encourage your support, and I think it's a tremendous project. It will be a wonderful godsend for both our local area and for our state.
Thank you. Any questions for our colleagues? Okay, seeing none, thank you for coming down. Okay, let me call up the former congresswoman that you alluded to, and also Commissioner Schrader and Jim Mattis or Matisse. Mattis. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm delighted to be here today with this bill in front of you. In your packet, you will have a letter from Peggy Siegler, and it is a wonderful letter.
We need your name one more time.
Huh?
We need your name for the record.
Oh, I'm Darlene Hooley, and I am representing the National Trust for Historic Preservation. I would hope you would read Peggy's letter. It really gives a fabulous background of this whole issue. The locks were built by a lot of different people, including one of the tribe. And this locks have been operating, or were operating, for over 100 years. And in fact, their anniversary for the 100th year is coming up May 6th. This is what makes the Willamette River navigable and called a navigable river, because it goes from Springfield to the Columbia River. Not having the locks work just cuts everything off after Oregon City. With what's happening on the Oregon City side, with their new designation of redeveloping the old paper mill, Blue Heron, this fits in perfectly with that, so that you have something happening on both sides of the river. It is a huge boon to our tourists. There are, we've talked to people who are also interested in actually moving goods on the locks. And this has really taken off. They've started a program or a group called Willamette One, where they have 200 plus members of that group to help restore the locks. This is good for economic development. It's good for preserving our past, and I think it is always a mistake if we don't remember our past and do what we can to make this happen. It's an issue I've been working on since I was in Congress. I was at the Corps every year begging them to put money into the locks, and we were mostly successful. That's not happening now, and so this is by having cities, counties, state coming together and saying, this is important. I think this will make a difference in D.C. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Commissioner?
Well, Chair Clem and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Commissioner Martha Schrader from Clackamas County. Thanks for the opportunity to appear before you and to announce miracle upon miracles. This was a unanimous decision on the part of the Clackamas County Commission. And we really enjoy it when that actually upon occasion happens. So I'm very pleased to tell you that. We were all in support of SJM 10. I'd like to commend our Clackamas County delegation, as well as Congresswoman Hooley, who truly has been working on this issue for over a decade. When I served with, I was going to say Commissioner Kenemer, but now as Representative Kenemer, and I know that Representative Ann Leininger also has been instrumental in this, and she was also a county commissioner. So you have us all here today. I'm excited to announce that last Thursday, April 24th, the Oregon Heritage Commission voted to acknowledge the Willamette Falls area as a state heritage area. Again, this has been close to a decade in making, and really, the Willamette Falls Heritage Coalition, together with the work of Congresswoman Hooley and Representative Lisa NATO, really worked hard to make this piece happen. And today we're urging you to consider letting Congress know that acknowledging Willamette Falls Heritage Area with a federal heritage designation will actually be a tremendous way to move all the projects that are happening in that area forward. Willamette Falls is Oregon. Before American settlers arrived, the falls were considered to be the second most important trading center for Native American tribes in the Pacific Northwest. It's mentioned in oral literature and stories of local tribes. And archaeological evidence on the rock faces of the falls indicates there may have been Native American activity as early as 13,000 years ago. I myself have had the opportunity to actually kayak up to the locks and around that whole area and see the petroglyphs that are on the side of the rock faces of the Willamette River. Pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Willamette Falls and Oregon City are also recognized as the end of the Oregon Trail, and the Willamette River offer cheap and efficient transportation, abundant fresh water, and eventually hydroelectric power that fueled the growth of the greater Portland region. This growth happened in West Lynn, Oregon City, and of course you all know that Oregon City was the first incorporated city west of the Rocky Mountains. Perhaps the most valuable component that spurred growth, not just in the area around the falls, but in the whole Willamette Valley, was the opening of the locks in 1873. It was a cheap, efficient method of transportation. It was the oldest continuously operated multi-lift navigational locks. They were required to close in 2011 due to needed repairs caused by age and deferred maintenance, and it's true. Thanks to Congresswoman Hooley and other folks, we have continually been trying to get the attention of our Corps of Engineers to get the dollars pulled together to get that locks open again. So in any case, a lot of history, a lot of opportunity here, and once again, we in Clackamas County urge your support of SJM 10. Federal designation as a historical area will strengthen the identity of the Willamette Falls and working communities of Oregon City and West Lynn by preserving and promoting their distinctive natural, cultural, scenic, recreational, and industrial resources. And the repair and reopening of the locks will actually restore transportation and economic opportunities throughout the entire Willamette Valley. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. It's nice to see familiar faces and also some new faces since I was here last. And I'm just a pleasure upon occasion to come back to my old stomping grounds here in Salem. Thank you.
Sarah?
Good job.
Chair Clem and representatives, I'm Jim Mattis, and I'm the secretary of the Willamette Falls Heritage Area Coalition. The Area Coalition had its genesis about 10 years ago when the then mayors of Oregon City and West Lynn gathered with a few other heritage buffs to try to find ways to help our local heritage-based organizations and museums, which were in dire shape, and in fact some of them were closing. They lit on the potential of having the area designated as a national heritage area. Last weekend, the Area Coalition secured, as Commissioner Schrader noted, for the area immediately around the Willamette Falls, the state's first state heritage area designation. With your support, we hope to obtain national heritage area status for the Willamette Falls and the river communities upriver to Mission Bottom and north to Lake Oswego. The tax-exempt nonprofit Willamette Falls Heritage Area Coalition Board is a large, diverse grassroots group with representatives by current and former city councilors and mayors, county commissioners, Metro, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, private business like PGE, tourism and artist representatives, and numerous heritage-based organizations such as the Ice Age Flood Institute and the Willamette Falls Heritage Foundation. The foundation, along with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, have been in the forefront for getting the 142-year-old Willamette Falls locks restored and reopened so we can have, as former Congresswoman Hooley noted, one Willamette River rather than two. And by having them reopened to reestablish navigation upriver of the Willamette Falls and downriver to Portland to promote commercial, recreational, and heritage tourism opportunities. In addition to urging National Heritage Area designation, SJM 10 allows Oregon to communicate to the federal government the importance of funding and reopening the locks. As was noted, May 10th is the 100th anniversary of when the locks went from private to public ownership. Having the locks be a public navigation facility made sense in 1915, and getting it back into use today makes even more sense. The Area Coalition and its partners all join in seeking the National Heritage Area designation, which it should be noted has no regulatory or land use authority or rulemaking authority at all. But having the designation allows for the lifting of many boats vitally concerned with and invested in Oregon, including stimulating interest in the Falls heritage and Oregon by telling the incredibly rich stories of the area. Those include the nationally significant story of the migration of the thousands of Americans on the Oregon Trail who settled here and secured the expansion of America's boundaries to the Pacific Coast and the Pacific Northwest. That settlement also was the catalyst for birthing industry in the Pacific Northwest. Another boat that National Heritage Area designation can raise through economic development is through heritage tourism business. Envision stern wheelers and weather vessels from Portland traveling south to the second largest falls by volume in North America, the Willamette Falls, to the many heritage sites, with side trips to the Mid-Valley wineries and the agricultural attractions of Oregon, like the Oregon Gardens and the iris and the tulip fields. Your support of efforts to garner National Heritage Area designation through SJM 10 will be greatly appreciated. I thank you, we thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have or get you any more information you may desire.
Great, thank you. Any questions? Representative Gilliam.
I have a comment, if I could, Mr. Chair. I had a chance to chat briefly with the Congresswoman before. And there are many aspects to this. I'm particularly wanting to emphasize the opportunity for tourism. And lest my colleagues think I'm going to make a speech about my view on our statue rotation, ooh, I am going to mention the statues, because the Congresswoman, as well as Senator Carter, both served on the commission that the governor formed to discuss that. And regardless of what we do or don't do with their recommendations, I thought it was incredible that the commission said, you ought to think about rotating both of your statues. Now, in that regard, if we brought the statue of John McLaughlin, as they say, back. What an opportunity. This is my point of view. This is my opinion. What an opportunity for this area down by the water to showcase on a dedicated platform, pedestal, this great pioneer whose statue's been in the hall for over 50 years. I know there's resistance out of a great deal of respect and tie to his legacy, but if we can think outside the box and look at the opportunity at the point where you're getting this designation, building up tourism, and then showcasing McLaughlin's statue, I think it would be a wonderful addition and would increase tourism and traffic in that area.
Further questions or comments? Okay, great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Now, is this Yvonne Addington? Something like that? Yes? Thank you. Can you come forward? And then Randy Tucker and Dave Barenberg. No, sorry. Sorry. No, I messed this up terribly. Varner Seaman, Yvonne, and David Lewis. Sorry. Let's see. David Lewis, I've got you first.
Okay. My name is David Lewis, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm a member of the Grand Ronde Tribe and a private consultant for research and history. And I live in Salem, Oregon. I've also been a member of the on the board of the Willamette Falls Heritage Board for a number of years now. I have direct relatives that lived at the falls. I think the Chinookan Clackamas peoples lived at the falls for many thousands of years, up to 15,000 years. And in the 19th century, the tribes wrote treaties with the U.S. government and were removed to the Grand Ronde Indian Reservation in Grand Ronde, Oregon. And so I'm directly related to all those people, and as well as the Kalapuya people and the Tequila peoples of Western Oregon. As a researcher, I found that this history is immensely important to Oregon history, because the tribes worked with many of the pioneers who came on the Oregon Trail and fur traders and other settlers that came by boat into the area and helped portage around the falls and helped them get to their lands in the Willamette Valley they were claiming, the donation land claims. And so my people, my relatives, were instrumental in helping with that whole sort of migration and settlement effort. As well, you know, we maintained villages there well into the 1850s and were regular, you know, participants in cultural activities there, like fishing and hunting. And we had longhouses there. We had pictures of longhouses there that show our longhouse on the west side of the river, about where the PG&E plant is now. And so it's an immensely important area to us. You know, the Clackamas people controlled the falls. They controlled access to the falls. The fishing resources there were immensely important to the people. And when settlers began coming in, they began also participating in that same activity, fishing there. And they realized the power potential of the falls and set up power plants, mills that would be run by the power of the water. And so we had the growth of the timber industry, growth of the woolen industries, that whole effort there was aided by the breadbasket of the Willamette Valley. So all the settlers had gone into the valley from places like, you know, St. Paul and Newburgh. They sent all their products downriver on barges. And a lot of times before they had the locks, they'd be offloaded at places like Kanema and then portaged around the falls, and they'd go into the mills at Oregon City. and the mills would then process them and send them out to international ports for trade. And so what we see is this really intricate network of different professions working together and sort of growing the Oregon Territory to become basically the anchor for the American nation on the West Coast. And if it wasn't for the falls there, I don't know whether source there could have been as an anchor for American, for the American nation there. There, you know, I come from peoples that are on native and non-native, so I can appreciate both sides, both stories at the falls there. And I do. And I think it's just an immensely important region for Oregon and for the Northwest and really for the West Coast, for the American nation. And really, we part of this national heritage effort is to somehow describe to our representatives and legislatures back on the East Coast the importance of that sort of complex structure to people who are more used to national heritage areas being battlefields. And we don't have a lot of Civil War battlefields or Revolutionary War battlefields in Oregon. And so our job is to really communicate the national meaning of this site, of this area, to the nation and have it designated as such. Thank you.
Chair Klim, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Varner Seaman, representing Portland General Electric. I'm here today to testify on behalf of Portland General Electric in favor of SJM 10. I'll keep my comments pretty brief. For PGE, this is a pretty important location for us. As the resolution or the joint, as SJM 10 notes, the Willamette Falls was the site of the first long-distance transmission or the first long generation of electricity and associated long-distance transmission in the United States of America. That was 125 years ago. That was the original power plant that started Portland General Electric, and so it's a pretty important site for us, given that it's our founding powerhouse. We appreciate the work that we've been able to engage in the last couple of years, working with local governments, folks at Metro, folks at Clackamas County, and with the local cities to open up some access to the falls. And we support this this bill going forward as a way to further recognize the site and, as folks have already noted, to reopen the locks at the site. So we encourage you to vote yes. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Addington from Sherwood, Oregon. I'm formerly first city manager of the city of Tualatin, where Senator Devlin got his start too, and spent 18 years there and 18 years in the governor's office as the manager of the Oregon Community Development Block Grant Program and Special Public Works. The reason I'm interested is that I've been all over the United States, all over Europe, and I've never found a better place than the Willamette Valley and Tualatin. When I look at my roots, I find that at least my grandparents, my parents, and my children and I have all been in the Willamette Valley all of our lives. My father worked in the shipyards at the Willamette River during the war. My grandfather was a carpenter there. And I've spent, lived within 10 miles all of my life, including Salem, which is within 10 miles of the Willamette River. As a public works funder of water, clean water systems and clean sewer systems, I help finance most of the public works along the Willamette River, clear down as far as the river goes in Eugene, all the way to the Columbia River. Still, my method now that I'm retired is to keep the history alive and to keep the open spaces alive as we knew them, where we swam, water skied, went through the locks, and still enjoy the atmosphere of the Willamette River. So I'm the cleanup person. I won't take any longer. They've all made really good reasons why we need to open the locks for transportation all the way up and preserve our heritage for the future.
Any questions? Okay, you're off easy. Thank you. All right, now let's try this. Randy Tucker and David Barenberg. Now, Mr. Groner, are you just monitoring this whole thing? I hate to invite you up without knowing what you might say, but I don't see you on the list. You're just happily watching.
I wouldn't take that risk with Rob.
Yeah, well. Okay. All right.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg, and I'm representing the city of West Lynn, and today I'm a part of the Clackamas County Unity delegation, it seems. I'll just be very brief. The city of West Lynn endorses this legislation and urges your passage, essentially in designating the area as a state heritage area. The criteria are that it's a place where natural, cultural, and historic resources combine to form a cohesive, important landscape. And that, I think, exactly describes what is before you with this proposal. So the city would like to see it advance. We urge your support, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Randy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker. I'm Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. I think I can see David and raise him. Not only is Clackamas County entirely unified, but Metro agrees with Clackamas County on this bill. We support the bill, and everything's pretty much been said, but not everyone's said it yet, so I won't say very much. As you know, Metro has been very involved in the development of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project with our partners at Clackamas County, at Oregon City, and the state of Oregon. The Metro Council also passed a resolution last year that I've submitted for the record, encouraging the reopening of the Willamette Locks. And this resolution is entirely consistent with all that. We absolutely support it and urge you to move it forward and send it on to Congress. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randy, can we build on this with Commissioner Schrader in the room? Let's just make this the beginning of agreement.
Mr. Chair, actually, there's a lot more that we work on with Clackamas County positively than is well known in this building.
All right.
Correct, Commissioner? Thank you.
Should we get them all up about Stafford and try and hash this out today?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. No, maybe not.
Rock and roll, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, yeah. And Damascus. With that, let's close the memorial and move on just like a car wreck, right? Just don't look. Let's just keep moving. Close the public hearing and open one on Senate Bill 261. Do you want the other one? Okay, let's open a hearing on 267A. And I need the two witnesses that signed up, Raquel and Lauren, to come up from OWRD and OWRC. Why are your names so similar? We'll get to that. You go ahead and talk, and we're going to get to a lot of questions I have formulated here.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, Raquel Rands here with the Oregon Water Resources Department. I agree, Chair. We get confused when I call OWRC, and they say OWRC, and it confuses me because I'm like, am I calling myself? So I agree. So today we're here to talk about Senate Bill 267A.
Oh, yes. Some chaos over there. Just ignore that.
267A, and this is a bill that extends a pilot program that was started in 2003, which allows irrigation districts to temporarily change the place of use for one season of their water rights within district boundaries and without making an application to the Water Resources Department. So it provides the districts with some flexibility while also ensuring that existing water rights are protected, that there's no injury or enlargement of the water rights. So through this process, field staff, they get the notice of the desire to change the place of use for the season. They review it for injury and enlargement, and then the irrigation districts make those changes. The department has reviewed the program and believes that it is working as intended. We continue to work with the Oregon Water Resources Congress in order to make improvements to the program. And at this point, the bill is proposing to extend the program to 2022, and we'll have a report to the legislature in 2021. And it also includes some other modifications to the program. We worked with stakeholders to make these improvements. The first one is it clarifies that this is for irrigation only. In addition, it requires that each year the department will provide notice of which districts will be participating. So there's 15 districts that are outlined that can participate, and there's the ability for districts to swap out if they don't participate in the program. And this, what we've seen is that districts don't necessarily participate each year, so this would provide notice. And then the third provision is that it allows the public to provide information to the department should one of those districts decide to swap in. So if there's a district that's not in the statute that decides to utilize the program because other districts aren't, then we would provide notice for 20 days and allow the public to provide us with information to make sure that the districts meet the requirements of the law. So those are the changes that are proposed, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, and we hope that you'll support the bill.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lauren Smith. I'm the policy coordinator at Oregon Water Resources Congress, and yes, our names are very similar. 411 always gives our phone number out to people who are calling OWRD, but we're happy to send those angry patrons their way.
Who had it first? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'll ask my questions
them.
Later.
I think we changed our names in our name in the 70s.
I see.
Okay. Anyways, OWRD submitted written testimony outlining the program, and I won't go through that except to say that our association represents irrigation districts and other agricultural water suppliers, including all 15 member districts in the program. The participants in our program deliver water all across the state, and it's designed that way. In fact, some of them deliver water in some of your districts. We find the program to be a very valuable tool for our participating districts and the farmers they serve. It allows for the less cumbersome process and saves time and money by allowing the participating districts to temporarily change their place of use of water rights within their district boundaries during irrigation season without applying for a transfer through the department. This program is a vital water management tool and creates the flexibility needed to manage the finite water resource that we have. We've been a proponent of this program since its inception, and in the future we'd like to see it become permanent. However, thus far, as Raquel pointed out, we haven't yielded the number of transactions yet where we feel comfortable coming to the legislature and asking for that. So we'd like it extended so we can have some more time to increase the transactions and iron out the kinks so we can come back to you and ask for you to make it permanent. So the amended language we support in that A engrossed version, it builds on the existing safeguards of the program, clarifies the water rights transferred under the program are for irrigation use only, and ensures that there's adequate transparency, as well as addressing some of the issues that were brought forth to the department by stakeholders before the bill came out. So we respectfully request your support of SB 267A, and would be happy to answer any questions. So thank you.
Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Raquel, who opposes this?
Chair Clem, Representative McLean, I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill.
Follow-up, then?
Follow-up.
I noticed some no votes in the Senate. Do you did they ever express to you their concerns with the bill?
Chair Clem and Representative McLean, no, I have not heard what their concerns were or why they voted no.
Follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
Janet Newman, who represents Tom and Darbina Bishop in Bend, are users in the Tumalo Irrigation District. The letter references that the existing laws under ORS 540, chapter, allows this, and I don't, the print's pretty small here, but is there a need for more information to make final policy decisions, or in essence, a need to extend the program as you guys want? I mean, what information is going to be acquired during an extension?
Chair Clem, Representative McLean, we've been working with OWRC over the years. For example, recently we did a training of the districts. Some of the things that we've seen in the program that we'd like to see improved is, for example, we've been working with them on the notices that they've been providing to water masters. So those are the kinds of, I think, improvements we'd like to see. However, I think more specifically, there is not a lot of data at this point. From what I recall, I think 8 out of the 15 districts in any given year have participated, and only 4 districts each year have participated in the program. So I think for us, it's we want to continue to make sure that the appropriate safeguards are in place. We want to make sure that it's working before we see it become a permanent program. We think it's important for us to, you know, come back and review the program again in 2021 and make sure that it is functioning properly. I did see the letter that was submitted, and I believe that it's referring to the question about irrigation and whether this pilot program could apply to other types of uses. And we're putting in the A engrossed version, it clarifies that it is only for irrigation. So I believe that the concern in that letter is addressed through the amendment. However, I did just briefly look at it before coming in here.
You're looking at this committee amending the Senate bill?
Chair Clem, Representative McLean, no, the A engrossed version of the bill, as is before you today, already includes that provision.
And that's the one the Senate passed?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Post.
Thank you, Chair Clem. Raquel, I read some more today and obviously listened to what you had to say. I'm still kind of learning about a lot of these things, and I'm trying to. 2003, right, is when it started, and we're looking to extend to 2022. So, by my math, that's nearly 20 years to have a pilot project. Is that normal? That would be like A, and then B, do you foresee when it moves from pilot project to no project, or A, you know what I'm saying, to where it goes to the next step? It just seems like a long time.
Chair Clem, Representative Post, when this program was first instituted in 2003, my understanding is that there was only 3 irrigation districts that were authorized to participate, and that I believe they didn't have full participation in the program until 2006. So there's been kind of starts and stops on this program. And in addition, as I noted before, we haven't seen full participation. I understand from the OWRC that they believe that once the economy picks up, there will maybe be a further need for this, and so we may get more data. In terms of your question of when is the right time to make it a permanent program or decide to not continue with the program, I would hope that we would get that data in the future so that we wouldn't have to come back and ask for an extension. That said, we think it is important to make sure that it is protecting existing water users and that it's functioning as everybody believes it's intended to.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Anybody else here not on the sign-up sheet on this one? All right, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 267A and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 261. And ask Mark Sitzma, Ryan Vanden Hoof, and Abby Bodoris. Mark, welcome.
Hi.
So you can go in whatever order you like. I have Mark first, but if you have a preference, that's fine.
Okay, well, thank you, Chair Clem, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Abby Bodoris. I'm a legislative analyst with the Department of Environmental Quality. We're here today is Ryan Hoof, the DEQ staff expert on ballast water and invasive species, and Mark Sitzma representing the Shipping Transport of Aquatic Species Task Force, and we're here to testify in support of Senate Bill 261. The bill will allow DEQ to sustain the current ballast water program service levels by increasing the fee charged on commercial vessel arrivals. The ballast water program works to prevent the introduction of invasive species to Oregon waterways from commercial shipping activities. I provided a fact sheet to you, which should be posted on OLIS. Senate Bill 261 was developed in consultation with the maritime industry representatives and has broad-based support in the task force, and it has broad support on the Senate side as well. So thank you for your time and consideration today. I'm going to turn it over to Ryan now. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Ryan Vandenhoof. I'm the Ballast Water Program Coordinator at DEQ headquarters in Portland. Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 261. Commercial vessels operating globally and coastwise represent a high-risk potential for as a pathway for transporting and introducing invasive species to our coastal and inland waterways. In the absence of proper management requirements and adequate compliance verification efforts, incidental vessel operations such as ballast water discharge can pose a serious threat for economic and ecosystem damages to our region. DEQ currently implements a 1.5 FTE effort focused on preventing the discharge of high-risk ballast water that can be a potential release of aquatic invasive species to our state waters. The bill before you represents an industry-supported fee increase that would help maintain our ballast water program activities at current service levels beyond 2015. Our ballast water management program strategy is dependent and focused on prevention. Specific activities that rely on fee revenue includes monitoring pre-arrival ballast management reports from vessel arrivals, screening those reports for various risk factors, proposed discharge activity, and for their compliance with management requirements, inspecting vessels and sampling ballast tanks for their compliance verification, developing and coordinating policy with our neighboring states and federal partners, and providing outreach and technical assistance to the maritime community, and carrying out enforcement actions as is necessary. These efforts rely upon a 50-50 cost share between general fund support and revenue from the ballast water management fee that's assessed on vessels entering our state waters. The fee was first established by the 2011 legislature at $70 per arrival and has not been increased since that time. Without a fee increase and a commensurate increase in general fund support, which has been requested under DEQ budget bill policy option package number 136, program activities would be reduced later this year from 1.5 FTE to less than 1.2 FTE. The direct result would be a decline in our vessel inspection and compliance verification efforts from over 15% of vessels being boarded to around 4% being boarded. In addition, we would have reduced capacity for interagency coordination, for outreach efforts, and for our technical assistance to the maritime industry. The proposed fee increase to $88 per arrival was developed with consensus support by the Task Force on Shipping Transport of Aquatic Invasive Species, which Professor Sitzma will discuss in greater detail. So to conclude, the stakeholder-supported fee increase in Senate Bill 261 will sustain our ongoing vessel inspection and compliance verification efforts, which aim to protect our state from potential economic and environmental damages posed by invasive species. Thank you for your opportunity to testify on this bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Mark Sitzma. I'm professor of environmental science at Portland State University, and I have chaired the Shipping Transport of Aquatic Invasive Species Task Force during the interim. Representative Witt has served on this task force in the past. Representative McEwen and Senator Roblin represented the legislature during this past interim. The task force also includes a diverse set of stakeholders from the shipping industry, environmental NGOs, government agencies, and includes our neighboring states of Washington and California and the U.S. Coast Guard. Our charge is to pursue solutions to management of invasive species introduction associated with commercial vessels to lower the risk of introduction of harmful species to Oregon waters. The primary focus of the 2014 task force was to evaluate current DEQ ballast water program efforts and emerging issues in order to make recommendations to the legislature. We produced a report to the legislature that we can provide to you if you haven't seen it. This fee increase that's the subject of this bill was one of the things we discussed, and I'm happy to report that the task force typically tries to operate on a consensus basis, and there was unanimous support among all task force members for the fee increase. The Oregon program is unique in my experience, and the cost of the program is shared 50-50 with industry and state government. Certainly, I think this is appropriate since the shipping industry certainly benefits from doing business in Oregon and should be responsible for environmental consequences of their activities. And all Oregonians benefit from a healthy environment and economic activity that shipping brings to the state. So it's a good partnership, I think, in funding this program. The fee is a small one relative to our neighboring states. California, for example, has an $800 fee for ships entering their state. But I think it's adequate and respectable effort aimed at protecting Oregon waterways from invasive species via ballast water. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I hope that you'll pass this bill.
Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. How is this fee collected?
Chair Clem, Representative Gomberg. The fee is assessed per vessel transit into state waters. So any vessel entering the Columbia River, for example, or Coos Bay is going to be assessed the fee. And in terms of administration of the fee, if that's what your question is getting at, we have a contract with the Portland Merchants Exchange, which does lots of billing already. They've already got a streamlined process for invoicing and accepting payments for a variety of different fees that vessels pay. So we contract with them to collect that fee on our behalf for a small fee that they collect for administrative costs.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So do I understand then that the fee is collected when a vessel docks?
Chair Clem, Representative Gomberg, actually it's for transiting into state waters. So not necessarily dependent upon which facility or dock that they use or anchorage facility, for example. And if maybe getting to the question you might be getting at about shared waterway of the Columbia River, the vessels that transit into the Columbia River are assessed a fee for to support our program, including those vessels that only go to the Washington side, which there might be around 25 or 30% of the vessels that come into the Columbia River that do not use a Portland facility or a Portland anchorage and only go to that side.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you. And then we've got Mark Landau representing several acronyms to talk to us.
While he comes up, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
Representative Gomberg may want to look closely at this bill due to the importance of invasive species. There is no emergency clause on the bill.
Well, boy. Mr. Landauer, what do you have to tell us about that?
I know that Chair Clem, members of the committee, Mark Landauer here today on behalf of the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association and Oregon Public Ports Association. I know that emergency clauses have been of great interest to Representative Gomberg this session, and I would absolutely defer to his advice and guidance on how you should proceed with that. Having said that, I just want to place on the record that the Columbia River Steamship Operators and the Oregon Public Ports Association support the increase in the ballast water fee. It's a very minor fee increase for a very and extraordinarily important program. Needless to say, the introduction of aquatic invasive species in the state of Oregon, we've been very lucky up to this point, avoiding quagga and zebra mussels and those two particular critters are awfully problematic. You just look to the Great Lakes and see the type of damage that they've caused there, amounting in billions of dollars. Needless to say, we don't need that here in our great state. And it's my understanding, in fact, that recently a boat was stopped on the eastern end of the state that still had some zebra mussels attached to it. And so any effort we can undertake to promote this program and avoid the introduction of these species is a something that I believe and my clients believe is a good thing. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Landauer? Seeing none, thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing. Is anybody else here on this? Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to respond to the good representative from the Christmas Tree District.
Yes.
I just find it very interesting that he's the one advocating that fee increases be applied sooner.
Ooh.
It's not true, Mr. Chairman.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 261. I forgot to mention there's somebody sitting to my right who none of us know who he is, and I should have asked him to introduce himself and explain why what we're doing today. So, Brian, could you tell us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Theis. I am wrapping up my Master of Public Policy program at Oregon State University, and this has been an internship through OSU and the Legislative Service Office. Started in January, and I'm here through the session. So thank you.
And they decided to subject him to us for the day to see what it's like to be a committee administrator while Ian huddles over there in the corner in fetal position trying to escape.
Thankfully,
Mr. Chair, if we could just ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
You mentioned you're coming to us from Oregon State.
Yes, sir.
Now, is that an accredited university?
I believe it is, sir.
I think more importantly, do they have a football team there still?
I'm there for academic reasons, but I think I've attended one sporting event.
No, Mr. Chairman, they seem to be playing with fire on the right side of the table.
There's two former student body presidents of Oregon State this direction. And some other people that direction. With that, thank you, Brian, and thanks for your service to us this session. And coming.
Should we remind Brian that this entire hearing will be available on OLIS if his family wants to tune in tonight and watch it over and over and over?
I had a great speaking part, so thank you.
We can loop it if you'd like.
With that, I think I will adjourn this committee. This committee.